Welcome to episode 104 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Saturday, August 16th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another special episode of the Fredcast as we continue our 2008 Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah coverage. And today, live on the scene and in the team car with Team Land Rover Orbea, a eyewitness account of how today's queen stage of the Tour of Utah played out. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes another special episode of the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by listeners just like you. You know, there's listeners just like you who are sending in PayPal donations and just plain clicking on the advertising links at www.thefredcast.com, going to stores you would go to anyway, getting the same prices you would normally get, but supporting the Fredcast. Thanks so much for your donations and your support. It's greatly appreciated. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast. I'm really tired, but today was a really exciting day. And you know what? Speaking of those donations that I was just talking about, I want to thank listener Allison. She sent in a donation today. Thank you so much, Allison. Very much appreciated. And you can too. Go to www.thefredcast.com. Click on that PayPal donation link. I very much appreciate it. It helps support everything that we do here at the show. Well, today was stage four of the 2008 Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. Today is the queen stage with nearly 15,000, count them, 15,000 feet of climbing in 98.3 miles. I mean, I can't even imagine doing, 8,000, 10,000 feet of climbing over 100 miles, but imagine 15,000 with two or category or beyond category climbs. Just amazing. And I was sitting in a team car, and I have to tell you, on a couple of those climbs, my lungs and legs were burning, and I was just sitting in the back seat of a car. So really an incredible day. I want to thank Team Land Rover Orbea for giving me a front row seat to today's race. Noreen Godfrey, the team manager, from whom we'll hear a little bit later, was driving what I was calling Mrs. Toad's Wild Ride, just like the Mr. Toad's Ride at Disneyland. If you ever get a chance to ride in a team car in the Pro Peloton, it is exciting and scary all at once. A lot of fun. Sitting shotgun today was 21-year-old Logan Hun from Auckland, New Zealand. Logan is one of the riders on Land Rover Orbea, unfortunately not able to participate in the Tour of Utah, but instead there to support his fellow riders. And he was handling the radios today, communicating to the riders as they went out on this very difficult stage. Now, the stage started here in Park City, Utah, right at the Park City Mountain Resort, right at the base of all of the chairlifts, some of those that were used in the 2002 Winter Olympics, right here in Park City. It then wound its way through Park City, up the hill into Camas, Utah, around Jordanelle Reservoir, before climbing again and then heading downhill on a fast ascent into Midway, Utah, down Provo Canyon, and then making a right turn up past Robert Redford's Sundance Resort, up the Alpine Loop, a blistering 8-mile climb, and then down the other side past the Timpanogos Cave, down into Draper, Utah, going along the benches, another little climb in there before descending to the base of Cottonwood Canyon for a climb which a lot of people consider very similar to the Alpe d'Huez, but without the 21 switchbacks, before the mountaintop finish today at the Snowbird Ski Resort. And it was a gorgeous day, perfect cycling weather, not too warm, not too cool, but the riders' legs absolutely were burning after all of that climbing. Now, before I summarize how the race played out today, I thought if I could, I'd like to try to paint a mental picture for you of what it's like in a team car, in the caravan of a professional race. Now, this isn't the UCI Pro Tour. It's not a European race, but it is a professional race on the United States national racing calendar. And so as such, it includes top-notch professionals, the guys from Garmin Chipotle, Rock Racing, and some of the other teams that are here, as well as some more minor teams, some local teams from the Utah area, and some development teams, much like Land Rover or Bea. All of those teams are allowed one car in the race caravan. Many of them also have additional vehicles out on the race course, especially for feed zones. As we heard from Noreen earlier in the week, Land Rover or Bea doesn't have additional staff and additional vehicles that they use for the feed zones. So while you'll see BMC or you'll see Garmin Chipotle in the feed zone with their soigniers and they're passing out Musettes, you will not see that for Land Rover or Bea. So in our car, of course, bikes on top, wheels inside the car just in case anybody should have a puncture or a mechanical, tools, several coolers full of water bottles with a variety of different liquids. So some of them just have water. Some of them have Hammer Nutrition's Heed because Hammer Nutrition sponsors Land Rover or Bea. I even saw water bottles filled with Coca-Cola, and you see that all the time. I remember in the Tour de France watching Jens Voigt from CSC Saxo Bank as he was riding along with a can of Coke in his hand. So yes, it's caffeine, but that's legal doping. And so you saw all of that in the team car. Every car in the caravan has a place. Every car is given a number, and they have to stay in that order as they proceed down the road behind the peloton. So, for instance, Garmin Chipotle, because their Blake Caldwell was in the yellow jersey at the start of today's race, they were car number one. Of course, behind the official race commissaires, those are the judges who are in charge of the race. So you have the peloton, the commissaires, and then you have all of the support vehicles. Also mixed in there, the neutral technical support vehicles. A lot of times at the European races and at some of the American races, you'll see Mavic in their distinctive yellow vehicles and their yellow motorcycles doing the neutral technical support. Here at the Tour of Utah, Shimano has bright blue vehicles and they're doing neutral technical support. We were toward the back of the caravan today, although earlier in the week, Land Rover or Bea, because they had a rider in the Best Young Riders jersey, were right up in the front of the caravan. Nevertheless, still a great vantage point for seeing what's going on. Now, in every car, several radios. There's one that's playing Radio Tour. Radio Tour is also sometimes called race radio, and that is the official communications device to let the teams know what's going on out on the road. So they tell you who's leading, who's in the break, who's chasing. They'll also let you know who needs more clothes, who needs to pass off arm warmers or leg warmers, who needs a feed. And a feed could be anything from energy bars to water bottles. And so Radio Tour would let you know that. So even in our case, being toward the back of the caravan, if one of the Land Rover or Bea riders needed something, then we had permission to race up to the front of the caravan and supply that rider with whatever it was that they needed. Also, as we're going up some of the climbs, very interesting to see what the pro racers will do as they're sometimes getting dropped and what they'll do to try to get back up into the front. I saw this with some of the top pros, some of the names that you would know, as well as some of the more obscure riders whose names perhaps you wouldn't know. If they wanted to get back up there, you see it all the time in the Tour de France, they would draft if they needed to. And if the race officials weren't watching, I saw them doing it behind many, many team cars. And again, this was across the peloton. Or they would grab onto a car and push themselves off, frequently on mirrors, sometimes on roof racks, whatever they could find. Again, every rider from every level, I saw them doing it today. And then, of course, there's the infamous sticky bottle. You see it all the time in the Tour. The race director holds out that bottle for the rider. The rider goes to grab it. Oh, and then all of a sudden, somebody hits the gas in the car. And of course, the rider gets a little bit of a boost heading up the road. I saw this with every rider. Sometimes a race official was around, and sometimes they would have something to say. Other times, race officials weren't around. It didn't seem to me that this was cheating. It seemed to me that this was something that happens all the time and that it was commonplace. Now, if you're going to tow a rider up with a sticky bottle 8 miles up a climb, or if you're going to tow that rider even a quarter of a mile, that obviously is cheating. But if it's a rider who has just stopped to pick up bottles for his entire team and he stuffed them down his jersey and in his pockets and put them all over his bike wherever he could, and he just needs a little boost to get going again, I think that that's okay. Again, towing him a quarter of a mile, even a tenth of a mile, probably a bit excessive. I didn't see any of that from any teams today. Now, if a team car gets out of order or doesn't play by the rules, and this is all like a big dance, and if they're not doing the steps properly, you will see one of those referees' motorcycles pull up alongside and read them the Riot Act. I saw them do that to one of the Rock Racing vehicles today. Folks in that vehicle not looking too happy. Luckily, Michael Ball was in a different vehicle, and he was up at the front of the peloton. He didn't hear any of that today. So that's a little bit what it's like in the caravan. Now, in the vehicle itself, when a rider pulls up and he needs water or he needs a special bottle, you've got to get that out to them. Then if they can, they'll pass bottles back. And constantly looking at the directions that the Tour of Utah has provided to try to provide whatever information you can to the riders up the road via radio. Now, all of these teams have pre-ridden, pre-driven the courses, and they have a pretty good idea of what's coming. But you know, when you are climbing 8 miles in high altitude and you get a little bit of oxygen deprivation going, it's nice to have somebody telling you in your ears what to expect down the road. So that's what it was like in the team car. It's a blast. I will tell you that going downhill at breakneck speeds, staying very, very close to the car in front of you is always exciting, something I recommend to any of you if you ever have the opportunity. It was an exciting day and really a lot of fun. So thanks a lot for providing me with a seat to Land Rover Orbea. Very, very much appreciated. Now, after yesterday's Stage 3, the Downtown Criterium in Salt Lake City, Blake Caldwell from Garmin Chipotle was sitting in first place in the general classification, 8 hours, 41 minutes, and 20 seconds. In second place, Darren Lill from Santa Rosa, California, and BMC Pro Cycling Team, 4 seconds back of Caldwell. In third, Blake Caldwell's teammate Jason Donald from Garmin Chipotle, 18 seconds back. In fourth, Jeff Lauder, a hometown boy from Salt Lake City, Utah, from Team BMC, 24 seconds back. And in fifth, Glenn Chadwick from Team Type 1, 28 seconds behind Blake Caldwell. So with Blake Caldwell in first, Jason Donald in third, you knew that Garmin Chipotle was going to try to control the peloton as much as possible as we went into today's Queen Stage. However, with Darren Lill in second and Jeff Lauder in fourth, especially with Jeff Lauder being a Utah native, BMC was in the hunt to try to do something special today to try to shake up the general classification. Now, meanwhile, Cesar Grajales, Tyler Hamilton, and Oscar Sevilla, all from Rock Racing, in 8th, 9th, and 10th place in the general classification. And Rock has been gunning at the front of the peloton all week. So going into the stage, you knew that Garmin, BMC, and Rock were all going to be trying to do something special today. One more thing to note before we talk about the race, and that is that the Tour of Utah did not take place in 2007, but in 2006 on this stage with the finish up at the Snowbird Ski Resort up Cottonwood Canyon. It was the yellow jersey of this year's race, Blake Caldwell, who won that stage. And so you know he was looking to try to repeat once again this year. On the first climb out of Park City, a small break did begin. And even before that, Victor Hugo Pena from Team Rock Racing tried to break away, but he was reeled in. But on that climb out of Park City toward Camas, on the backside of the Jordanelle Reservoir, a small break of about 11 riders went away, and included in that group, no surprise, a BMC rider, Ian McKissick, a Garmin Chipotle rider, Tom Peterson, and oh look, it was a Rock Racing rider, Michael Creed. They did eventually open up a lead of almost 5 minutes over the peloton. Part of that lead was aided by a train that went through the course between when the brake went through and the Peloton having to stop cold and wait for that train to go by. And you could hear over the race radio as the teams were told that there would be no neutralization. In other words, there would be no time makeup, that this simply was something that happens out on the course. And as a result, whatever time was gained by the brake was going to be given to the brake, and there was nothing that they were going to do. By the time the train moved on, the riders went, and then they headed up toward the top of what is called the Alpine Loop, and that is right by the Sundance ski area. And it was at this point when one rider was able to go away. Rock Racing's Michael Creed going up and over the top of the Beyond Category climb all by himself and then heading down what turned out to be a rather treacherous downhill descent into Draper, Utah. And by the time they reached the next small climb, well, Creed had been absorbed by the Peloton. Everyone waiting to see what would happen as they headed up Cottonwood Canyon for that final Beyond Category climb to the Snowbird ski area. As we started up the climb, Rock Racing's Oscar Sevilla attacked, but he was soon joined by Blake Caldwell and Tom Danielson from Garmin-Chipotle. Caldwell not wanting to lose his yellow jersey, Danielson there to help him from his team, his Garmin-Chipotle team, to try to make sure that that didn't happen. Eventually, however, that group was caught, and a large group headed up Cottonwood Canyon, and we waited to see what would happen. Sevilla attacked once again on the climb, being chased down by Garmin, but then Glenn Chadwick from Team Type 1 was the one to chase down Sevilla, and then the yellow jersey group caught Sevilla. Chadwick moving away from them, opening up about a 20-second lead while Sevilla got shot out the back of the yellow jersey group. At about 5 kilometers to go, the yellow jersey Blake Caldwell attacked and bridged to Chadwick, opening up a little bit of a lead, about 15 seconds. It was then that Jeff Lauder from Team BMC, again the Salt Lake City native, bridged to Caldwell, and they went away from Chadwick. Lauder eventually attacked in less than 1 kilometer to go, and Lauder went on to win today's stage with Caldwell taking second place. Caldwell coming across 13 seconds behind Jeff Lauder. Third place going to Glenn Chadwick from Team Type 1, 25 seconds back. Fourth place to Burke Swindlehurst, also from Salt Lake City, and the Bissell Pro Cycling Team, 46 seconds behind Jeff Lauder. In fifth place, Chris Baldwin from Toyota United, 1 minute, 1 second back. And parenthetically, it was announced yesterday that Toyota United will not be returning to the Peloton next year, and that those riders have been released from their contracts and that they are now looking to try to find new sponsors for next year. A lot of good riders on that team. We'll see what happens. Sixth place, Brent Bookwalter from Santa Rosa, California, Team BMC, 1 minute, 14 seconds back. Oscar Sevilla came through from Rock Racing, 1 minute, 41 seconds back in seventh place. In eighth, Peter Stetna from Garmin-Chipotle, 2 minutes, 9 seconds back. In ninth, Darren Lill from BMC, 2 minutes, 11 seconds. And in 10th, Phil Zajacek from Team HealthNet, 2 minutes, 55 seconds behind our race leader. Meanwhile, while all of this was going on up the road, honestly, we were still on the climb. We were still several kilometers from the finish as we were following the best-placed Land Rover or Bea rider today, and that was Dave Vuketz. And Dave came in 14 minutes, 38 seconds behind the race leader today. Now, honestly, I think that that was a pretty good finish for a young rider one of his first major races. And that's pretty good when you consider that he came in ahead of some of the better known names in cycling. Michael Creed from Rock Racing, Victor Hugo Pena from Rock Racing, Omer Kem from the Bissell Pro Cycling Team, and a number of others. And after Dave came through, I still had time to walk to my wife's car, wait for a lot of traffic, head downhill several kilometers, and it was then that I saw Freddy Rodriguez still grinding his way up the hill. This was a tough stage and a very difficult climb, and I think the Land Rover Orbea guys did an excellent job. Now, before we go to Noreen and a quick interview with Dave to hear how he did today, general classification shakes out as follows. Blake Caldwell from Garmin-Chipotle still in the yellow jersey, but Jeff Lauder, today's stage winner from Salt Lake City and Team BMC, is just 7 seconds behind Caldwell. In third, Team Type 1's Glenn Chadwick, 42 seconds back. Burke Swindlehurst from Bissell, 1 minute, 7 seconds back. And in fifth, from Toyota United, Chris Baldwin, 1 minute, 22 seconds back. Now, tomorrow is a short 7.5 mile individual time trial. It is going to decide the final wearer and winner of the yellow jersey and this year's 2008 Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. Lauder, typically known as a better time trialist than Caldwell, but sometimes when you're wearing the yellow jersey, magic can happen, so we will see. But let's go to Noreen and to Dave and hear how they think today's stage went. Okay, Noreen, or should I call you Mrs. Toad? That was a wild ride. So a long stage, a hard stage. How do you think the guys did?
They did awesome. They did awesome. They're all out there. They're riding and surviving. That's all we can ask.
And a lot of competition out there from some top pros. But your guys really stayed in the mix today, didn't they?
They did. They did. They stayed right on in there. And Tyler and all those guys were thrown down.
So what do you think was the hardest part of today's stage, and how do you think that the guys did on that part?
The hardest part of today's stage was me going downhill trying to follow him in the car. You might want to ask Dave what the hardest part of the stage was.
Okay. Dave, how was today's stage?
I think it went pretty well. Yeah.
What was the hardest part for you today?
Definitely that last climb. I mean, probably it was both the same as the first climb, but just having done 140K before this last climb, and then you see 20K to go, and it's all uphill from there. So
let's go back to that first big climb, the one out by Sundance. Narrow roads, a lot of people on the roads, really steep. How did that feel?
I actually was feeling pretty good on that one, so just sort of kept coming around guys, and I was in the sort of front group over the top, so I was pretty pleased with how that one went. It was a little bit better climb, I think, for me than this one, but...
Then again, I was watching you on this climb, and you were passing some of the citizen racers today like they were standing still. That's got to feel good.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And I mean, I saw you pass one of the big guys from Rock. Michael Creed, I think you passed. Say anything to him, or did he say anything when you went by?
No, not much. Everyone's just sort of in their own little world out there on the last climb, so not much talking going on.
Okay, so tomorrow's the time trial. Strategy, or what do you think about going into that?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty far down on GC at this point, but for me, I'm just going to go out there and ride it as hard as I can. Just something I've learned from coaches and stuff is just to, when you're in a stage race, always just try and ride the TT as hard as you can, because one day when you're in a stage race and you need to ride the TT, you need to know how to do it. So,
okay, so Noreen, tomorrow's a time trial. You don't have to wash bikes tonight because your time trial bikes are already clean. What do you tell the team going into tomorrow's individual time trial?
Tomorrow's just going to be ride as hard as you can. There's no strategy except for just go as hard as you can.
And how do you think at least the chances are against some of the other young riders and also against some of the top pros that are here?
Well, the young riders have it locked up already. Pete has it locked up in first place, and Tom has second. So I think it's going to be Lauder 1 second. Going to be really interesting to watch this time trial tomorrow, and our guys are going to get in there and just get it done.
Yeah, I mean, the time trial for tomorrow really is going to decide the GC, isn't it?
Yes, it will. It will.
Any predictions?
I don't know. I'm not going to call that one. Looks like Carson's coming in.
All right, well, Carson's coming in. Thanks, Doreen. Thanks for the ride, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
So a great day, a lot of fun for me, a lot of work for the riders. And again, tomorrow with the individual time trial, it is going to determine the winner of the race. And of course, we will talk to Noreen after the race, hear how her guys did, and hopefully talk to perhaps one other team director that I tried to wrangle into giving me his opinion. So we'll see how that goes. So hope that you're enjoying this sort of different coverage of the race from a different perspective. I'm enjoying watching it through the eyes of a race director and also watching it through the eyes of these younger riders trying to make their way in the pro peloton. It's a totally different perspective than you will get on TV or in the newspapers, and I hope that you're enjoying it. And from your emails, it sounds like you are. So for now, this is David Bernstein and the Fredcast Cycling Podcast saying thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your evening. Enjoy this music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.